on listening to the Dhamma. So today it's the fifth day of the meditation retreat that we have. And we started on the 5th of October, and it's now the 9th. It's time that we have setting our hearts on training, on practicing. And so may you all have mindfulness looking over and after your mind. So we all have this deep respect in the Buddha, the Dhamma, the Sangha. They are our refuge, our highest refuge, our highest object of recollection, and there's nothing higher for us. And so we have seen the Buddha in terms of Buddha rupas made out of various forms, out of wood or out of metal or concrete. And when we recollect the qualities of the Buddha, his virtues, then our hearts experience this brightness and joy. And so this is offering the homage of our practice. We can offer homage in terms of flowers, making offerings of light and incense, what they call amisa, puja. And this is a lot of merit. But the Buddha praised offering homage through one's practice, because his heart was completely pure. And he didn't wish for any physical offerings or homage from anyone. But he enjoyed and was pleased through people offering the homage of practice, because this is what will lead beings to the end of suffering. And he didn't want any wealth or any status or praise, but what he wanted was for beings to be freed from suffering as much as they were able to. So we recollect his great virtues, and through that the heart becomes bright and joyful. And this is Buddha Anusati, the recollection of the Buddha. If we're feeling afraid or there's some danger, then we can think about the Buddha and really set our hearts firmly in this recollection of him. And that fear can lessen or even completely disappear. Wisdom can arise, and we can find safety. And why is that? Well, it's because we have our mindfulness firm, and then wisdom can arise. If we have to receive the results of our karma, the mind still has mindfulness and wisdom. It's able to use that experience to cultivate and develop those qualities. So we recollect the virtues of the Buddha, and this is extremely beneficial. The virtues of the Dhamma, the virtues of the Sangha. And then we can cultivate a heart of loving kindness and spread that out. So may I be well and be happy. May all beings be well and happy. And we begin to practice the Dhamma. We establish our mindfulness, the sati, this quality of recollection, sampajanya, this clear awareness, and try to make these constant. So Lumpur Cha Ajahn Chah, he taught us to have mindfulness. He taught the monks that when they leave their dwellings, that they should bow first. When they enter into their dwellings, they should bow first. When they go into a Dharma hall, that they should bow first. So to establish their mindfulness in this way. And then, having bowed, that they then walk out and they have their mindfulness there with the walking. It's not that having bowed they just forget their mindfulness. It's not like that. And so he encouraged us to do this as a way to, for us to train ourselves to have humility and respect as well, to put down our conceit. And so this is how he taught his disciples. And he also frequently praised the example of Asaji Thera to his disciples as well. And he was an arahant, but when Venerable Sariputta went to ask him, "What dharma have you awakened to?" he replied that, "I'm just new to the Buddha's dispensation, that I haven't been ordained for a long time." And he was very humble, even though he was an arahant. So Ajahn Chah, he praised Asaji Thera very frequently. So as his disciples then try to develop this heart of respect, of humility, you can recollect Venerable Asaji like this and try to have a lot of mindfulness as well. That Ajahn Chah, he didn't talk a lot based on theory or on the scriptures, but he got his disciples to practice. So like in the ordination ceremony, that he emphasized the contemplation of hair of the head, hair of the body, nails, teeth and skin, that these things are unattractive. Because what is it that we're deluded in? Well, it's this body that we're lost in it being beautiful, in it being something which is constant, a source of happiness, which is me. And the reality that we live in is distorted in this way. Because in truth, it's not beautiful. It's not constant. It's something which is dukkha, it can't endure. It's not a self. But the way that the defilements have trained our minds is to teach ourselves that this is something that's beautiful. That hair is beautiful, these nails, teeth and skin, that they're all beautiful. And so in the ordination ceremonies, the upacaya, the preceptor, he gives these meditation objects of kesa loma naka danta tacho, tacho danta naka loma kesa, so hair of the head, hair of the body, nails, teeth and skin, to be recited backwards and forwards. And this too is a means to bring our minds to peace, that when we contemplate this, the heart can become radiant and joyful through seeing that they're not beautiful. Because what is it that our eyes see? Well, they see hair, they see nails, teeth, and skin. So we take these five objects to contemplate, see how they're not attractive. Because it's our defilements that try to convince us that they are attractive. But if we believe that, then the heart becomes dark. And so we need to sincerely practice this in order to see these forms as being unattractive. Because if the defilements went out and they convince us that they're beautiful, then the heart becomes dark, that it doesn't have any peace. And this is an obstruction for us. And especially for people who are inclined to towards attractive things and seeing things as being beautiful, that they should contemplate the unattractive side of things. And so like hair, this is something which is not clean. And if we don't wash it, then our heads become itchy and bacteria starts to grow. The whole body, that if we don't wash that, it turns into something filthy. We get some new clothes or some new robes, and initially they're very attractive and nice. But after having put them against this body for just a short amount of time, they turn dirty and unclean, and then we need to wash them. Because if we think about it, if this body really was something beautiful and good, then we'd put cloth against it and there wouldn't be any problem, that we could use that, wear it for a really long time. But we're not able to do that, are we? And it's just one day, and these clothes, they become unattractive as well, things that we don't like. And why is that? It's due to these the bacteria, the sweat, and the various bacteria on the body which have arisen. So when they come up, then they send out an unpleasant odor. So after having contemplated these external things, hair of the head, hair of the body, nails, teeth and skin, we can consider what is it that's inside this body. The Buddha said there are 32 parts to it. So in terms of the liquids in the body, that there's blood and there's saliva, that there's the lymph and the urine, these different kinds of liquid. And these two are not attractive. And then there are the various body parts and organs. So we have the heart and the liver, the kidneys, the lungs, for example. And it's not like the body is just a constant solid mass, but it's something which is hollow and is filled with various organs. So inside the skull, there is the brain, for instance, which is like a heap of macaroni. And if we have good samadhi, then we'll be able to contemplate into this body and see how it's not attractive. And we can feel a sense of dismay, dispassion, and peace. And then the heart becomes joyous. And we see that, it's really like what the Buddha taught, that beauty is there within asubha, within the unattractive, within a corpse that a ghost has tossed aside. And we see that when the body has died already, that there's nothing beautiful to it. And if the mind sees that reality, then it becomes beautiful. Because if we see in terms of beauty, then the mind is deluded and it's dark. But if we see it as unattractive, then there's knowledge and beauty that arises within the heart. There's joy, there's happiness through seeing the truth. And so they're different in this way, these two ways of seeing. So we need to train, we need to practice. Gaya, Gata, 32 parts of the body, having mindfulness, contemplating into the body, both inside and outside, seeing it as unattractive. So whether we're standing, walking, sitting, lying down, we should maintain our mindfulness. And when we're moving, we have mindfulness over the movements of the body, being mindful all the time. And then we contemplate, just like I've explained, and seeing the unattractive side of the body. And sometimes this is not clear within the mind, and that's because our samadhi is not yet good, and so it's not clear. But we carry on contemplating. So we can contemplate further and ask, well, what happens when the body dies? So we may have seen a dead body before, in previous times, that they would leave them in a cremation forest or a charnel ground. And what happens to them then? Well, then they go cold, they start becoming bloated and turn a green tinge. And then maggots get born within them and then start eating away at the organs of the body. And sometimes dogs or rats can come along and take away parts of the body to eat as food. And the body slowly starts to disintegrate, to break apart. And the ligaments start to break. And then the various bones get separated and scattered about. So the teeth fall out. And then these all steadily decay and go back into earth. And in the end, It's disappeared. It's not there. So what goes first is the air element, the breath. And then the water element evaporates. And then the body, going from being warm, it becomes cool. And if we touch someone who has died, and their body is cool already, because there's no fire element there. If we touch other objects and they're cool, we don't feel anything. But when we touch a cool dead body, then we get shivers. Because there's this realization that I need to die as well. And death is like this. And I don't want to be like this. So when the air element leaves, and then the fire element leaves, and the water element evaporates, and then the earth element starts to get broken down, and all of the parts of the body just go back into the four elements. When we are born into our mother's womb, we started off with just two cells. But very quickly, these multiply and become 4, and then 8, and then 16, and very fast. And the various parts and organs of the body start to be built. And then we get born, and we depend upon the food and water and oxygen. That's, you have the fire element of the body. We breathe, and breathing constantly. And the body grows and develops, and the cells of the body are being born, but they're also decaying all the time as well. It's just that there are new cells being born. But this depends upon its causes and conditions as well. And if the decaying process becomes advanced, then that's what we call old age, or pain arises. And when we can't treat that, then the body dies. And bacteria appears, but really that bacteria is there already. It's just when the body doesn't have immunity, then this illness can come up. And so like if bacteria gets into the bloodstream, then one can die. Even if one isn't all that old, it's like 60 years old and one can die from this bacteria being in the blood. So we can contemplate then how this life is not sure. Life is not sure, but death is sure, that we all need to die, that our life ends in death. So this is asanya, using our memory or perception to see the ever-changing nature of this, how it's not me, it's not mine. And the mind can find ease here. And when the body dies already, and then it decays and it becomes rotten like this, and we can't find any self in there. When we see that, then there's even more ease in the mind. And so this is contemplating through the lens of asubha. If we're contemplating in terms of the four elements, we see that when there's an absence of fire element, there's an absence of air element, and then the water element evaporates, then this is what happens to the body. So it's changing, or adjusting a little bit, the object of our mind, changing it from asubha into elements. So in the beginning we can start off with asubha and then move on to the elements. Seeing the elements there, and how these break, they decay, and then you can see how they're anatta, they're not self. So initially we use sanya, this perception, to do that, because if our samadhi is just a little bit, then we won't see a nimitta, a mental image. So we need to use this faculty of proliferation or of concoction first. So if our minds are concocting a lot anyway, then we bring it to concoct about this body, seeing it as being not beautiful, as not self, as just natural elements where no self can be found within that. So through seeing that, then there's a buoyancy to the heart, an increased sense of ease and relaxation. And the things which bind our hearts, which put a squeeze on them, these defilements, they can disappear to some degree. And eventually our samadhi becomes better and grows. When that happens, then when we contemplate, this becomes clearer. And maybe an image will arise, and there's peace there to the mind. So throughout our daily life, whatever it is that we do, we should be mindful all the time. That Ajahn Chah had taught that for himself, that when he was training, he would view the monks walking in front of him as being like ghosts, or just skeletons, as not beautiful. So if one has samadhi, then one can do this. You know, see people walking around and see them as unattractive, see them just as bones. So he could see himself as asubha, other people as asubha. If we have samadhi, we can do this. See all people as asubha, myself as asubha, as things that need to break apart. And so when our minds see in this way, then they begin to gain an understanding that, it's like this, that the body, it's not self like this. And that the true nature of reality is this way. And so through here we've seen the elements. To one level, the mind becomes peaceful to one level. You can contemplate the elements like this. But this isn't thinking, but rather it's a wisdom that arises through a meditation. And then next, a knowledge appears. Like, this really is not self. That it's just of its nature to break apart. And we understand that clearly into the nature of all physical and mental things. So in the beginning, we come to study to know about this first, that we have this respect in the Triple Gem, that the Buddha is our highest refuge. There's no other refuge for us. As our source of security. And that he's able to genuinely destroy suffering. But when we come to see the Buddha in another way, we see him as pure emptiness, as an arahant. In the beginning, we see the Buddha kind of in his physical form first, and with this body, this physical flesh body. But the Buddha said that one who sees the Dhamma sees the Tathagata. And then when we see that, when we see the Dhamma clearly, then this great faith appears. So therefore, having taken refuge in the Buddha, that we come to contemplate. Because the way that we go about it, that it depends upon our character. So for those who have a lot of faith, they can practice in that way, through faith. But some people, they need to use a lot of contemplation. So contemplate into the elements, into asubha, and see the elements as being empty, and use wisdom there, and gain this wisdom that comes from meditation. And so that kind of wisdom, it's not sanya, it's not perception. But initially we need to use that perception because our samadhi is not yet enough. So we bring up that perception and contemplate the nature of the body, and contemplate and understand all the things that arise and meet with our minds, to be teaching our minds. Because when they meet with sensory objects, then they become deluded, lost in love and hate and annoyance, liking this and not liking that. That when the eye sees a form, or the ears hear sounds, the tongue tastes odors, the nose contacts odors, and the body meets with physical sensations, or these thoughts, emotions arise within the mind, then there is pasa, this contact coming up, and here is where clinging arises. And so the sense of self appears here, that I appear here, they appear here. This is where proliferation appears. So we need to be looking after our mind, teaching our mind, telling them that I don't want this, that if I grasp at this, I will suffer, that this is not me, it's not them. Don't attach to this, yeah? So just put this down. And it's like a parent teaching a child. Say, if there's fire there, they need to teach that child that fire is dangerous, don't touch it. And tell them that if they do, then they may get really hurt. Because if that parent and just is absent-minded for just a bit, then that can be really dangerous. And so children need people to look after them. And in this case, then the people looking after them can't afford to be absent-minded for even just a few minutes. So in the same way, our minds need caring for, because they're still children. And we can't afford to go off to be absent-minded. And these childlike minds of ours, and they go and grab every sensory experience they come into contact with, and they immediately create a self out of that. So initially there's a birth in terms of the body, and we take that to be me. But now what happens every day is a birth in the mind. There's me, there's mine appearing in the mind. There's becoming and birth appearing within the mind. And that happens so many times in the space of one day. So we need to be really careful here. When feeling arises, when contact arises, a sense of self comes up, we need to really be teaching our minds. Like, why be attracted? Why be averse? Why be annoyed? Why hate? And what's the point in doing that? That if the mind wants to start thinking, proliferating, concocting about these things, why do that? And don't believe in that. Because whether we're liking, whether we're disliking, that's not the self. If we can see that, then there's an ease, because we don't attach. That we know all of these sensory experiences for what they are in time. And so then the heart doesn't, it's not deluded by this. And if we're not deluded in the experiences of the senses, then we're not deluded in the world. If we're not deluded in the world, that means is that we're not deluded by sights and sounds and odors and tastes and tactile sensations and the objects that appear within the mind. So the first time that Ajahn Chah went to England, a long time back now, in 1977, so it was 47 years ago, that he said that no matter where he went, the Buddha was appearing all the time. But what he meant by that was this inner Buddha, this nature of awakening. And so there was, they meant is that Dhamma, knowledge, was appearing constantly, and he wasn't deluded in the world. And previously, people in Thailand thought that Europe was somewhere that was very advanced and developed. But Ajahn Chah said that he wasn't deluded. He said that it was just going to an kind of an inner overseas. What he meant by that was that it's still in this world. And that by going overseas, you're not, you know, traveling outside of this world. And if it's out of this world, then that's an outer overseas. And that's really going out. And what we mean by that is Lokuttara. And so going, really going over the world. So abandoning or going outside of happiness and above sadness, outside of birth and above death, that the mind is free. But if there's still that delusion, then it's just this inner overseas. It's not an over overseas. That if it really is this transcendence, going over, going out, and then you see that it's all just elements, it's all just earth, water, fire, and air, that there isn't really anything there. Even if there are grand buildings that are there, that they're still always changing, that they're unsatisfactory, that they're not a self. And that's true for all of these things. And so he wasn't deluded in that. So if we become deluded in that, then we get born, then we have to get old, and then sick, and then die. So therefore, having faith in the Buddha, and we offer our practice as homage to the Buddha, the Dhamma, the Sangha, we maintain our mindfulness, sampajanya, clear awareness, contemplate into the body, do this a lot, develop this a lot, until we're really able to do that, until this wisdom arises, and the mind that really experiences emptiness. And so when we understand this, understand the Dhamma of the Buddha, and then we can see how the world is constantly revealed and opened already. It's just that our minds don't see the reality of it. That nature is always revealing itself. And whether a Buddha awakens in this world or not, that the Dhamma is still present here. That there are still causes and conditions which lead to qualities arising and staying and ceasing, and that there's this causality there. But when we see that, we see the Buddha, then we see the Dhamma. And if we see the Dhamma a lot, then we attain to the Dhamma. But in the beginning, it's this understanding that we come to study the Dhamma first, and then we know the Dhamma, then we practice the Dhamma, and then we truly see the Dhamma. So may all of you be intent in this, and may you grow in blessings.